Jewish Latin Princess, Episode 12, Jenny Milgram, Genealogist and Crypto Jews Expert.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast by Yael. Every week, get your dose of inspiration from the world's most uniquely talented Jewish women. And from Yael herself. Seeking profound and practical ways to live a joyful, richer Jewish life? Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. And now, Jewish lifestyle expert and bilingual blogger at JewishLatinPrincess.com, your host, Yael.
Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess, everyone. I'm your host, Yael Trush. Today I speak with Jenny Milgram, genealogist and crypto-Jewish expert. And this is not a title she earned by going to university or taking courses, but something she has earned with hard work, sweat, and many, many tears. Not just hers, but surely those of her ancestors. Jenny is the author of My 15 Grandmothers and of How I Found My 15 Grandmothers, a step-by-step guide. Both books have won the 2015 Latino Author Book Award. Jenny Milgram was born in Havana, Cuba, to a Roman Catholic family of Spanish ancestry, and she grew up in Miami. Jenny and I talk about her personal journey, which led her to become an Orthodox Jew, and later on to embark on an unparalleled work of genealogy. She was able to fully document her unbroken maternal lineage, going back as far as 1405 to pre-Inquisition Spain and Portugal. She has traveled extensively to Spain and Portugal while doing field research on the past Jews of those countries, as well as to many countries in Latin America. Over there, sometimes he does a lot of legwork to get ancient Inquisition files out of dusty boxes and rooms, negotiate with authorities to get those files digitized. Jenny and I talk about the emotional aspect of what she personally went through and what many souls who, as Jenny says, come back to this world alone and searching, what those people go through. Jenny has taken it as a personal mission to educate the world about the crypto Jews, to help those who are searching for their ancestry, and to make sure that communities are sensitive to souls who are trying to come back or who are looking to connect with their Jewish lineage. She is currently the immediate past president of the Jewish Genealogical Society of Greater Miami, president of Tarbut Sefarad for Marsella in Spain, immediate past president of the Society for Crypto-Judaic Studies at Colorado State University. She was awarded the State of Florida Genealogy Award for her outstanding achievements in the field of genealogy. Her work has been featured in the Jerusalem Post, the Miami Herald, among many other publications around the world. You will hear from a very brave and extraordinary woman. Get ready to get goosebumps and be wowed. Here's Jenny Milgram. Jenny Milgram, welcome to Jewish Latin Princess.
Wow, it is incredible to be here. Thank you so much, Al. I love it.
Thank you so much. We have so much to talk about. You have such a unique story and so just so interesting. So let's get right to your first book, My 15 Grandmothers. In it, you take readers through a journey that is full of suspense as you unravel this web of that has kept like a secret hiding for generations. And I, you know, when I was reading the book, I thought, wow, some people, you know, connect to Judaism and they suspect maybe that perhaps there was something in their ancestry that led them to those feelings of connection and they eventually convert, but not everybody decides to take an active search for those, for the past connections that might have been there, but you certainly did. And what you discovered in your journey not only helped you, but it's helping people all over the world. So tell us about the story of discovering your 15 grandmothers without giving us the entire book away, because it's such a wonderful read. I want everybody to read it.
No problem. So with this journey, it was one that started as a young child where I never really felt that I was this Cuban Catholic princess, let's say, of the society that I had been born into. I always felt that somehow I just felt that that wasn't who I really was. And from a really young age, I just started having identity crises. And, you know, it went on and life, you know, goes on. And when I was able to, I reached out to Judaism, which is the religion that just I kept having an affinity for, or let's say the spirituality, I just kept going towards it. And I finally converted at some point. I think I must have been maybe 28, 9, or maybe 30. I finally converted, and I was living a life as an Orthodox Jew, thinking that I had looked at all the branches of Judaism, but the reality is that I was brought up a very strict Catholic with a lot of rules and regulations back in the 60s, and all the rules and regulations of Orthodoxy kind of fit right in, because mm-hmm. it's a lot of rules and regulations. So I was very happy in that, but then I always felt that there was something more and deeper, and because of some clues and stories that my maternal grandmother gave me, and some family customs that were very Jewish, and some Jewish-themed jewelry that she left me when she died, I decided that we must have been from the pre-Inquisition Jews, and I decided that because, not just because of this circumstantial, let's use that, evidence, mm-hmm. but because the feeling of being Jewish had been in me for so long,
right.
from a child, that, and that, plus all of this circumstantial evidence, was, whoa, I'm just going to research this and see what happens. So that is what gave me that push, number one, I think, to prove a little bit to myself that I wasn't crazy, because it's a crazy kind of thing. And then number two, because my children had not been able to convert with me, and I wanted to be able to give them this rich beauty that I was involved in, and I loved it so much, and I felt so Jewish. So along the way, people started looking up to me to see how they could do what I had done too, once I was able to find and prove that I did come from a pre-Inquisition lineage.
Right, right. And your kids at this point, after you've uncovered everything, at this point, I think I heard you once say that the Beis Din in Israel says they're considered fully Jewish. Right.
Right. Now, after, you know, the story begins, and, you know, at the end, after all of this that I found, and after everything and all of the evidence, I brought it to the head Sephardic rabbi in the United States, mm-hmm. Rabbi Mark Angel at the time, a few years back, and he did state that I had been born Jewish, which obviously the impact of that means that my anyone that comes from me is Jewish. And then wow. in Israel, I also wanted it done by the Ashkenaz. And the reason that I wanted it done both ways, let's say, is because I wanted to be sure that if my children should decide to take this on, or my grandchildren,
right.
there would never be a question. And you know how it is. There's all these Beit Dins and Israel and the rabbinate and all this kind of stuff. So all this was also taken to Israel, and I did get a letter stating that there should never, ever be a doubt again that I was born Jewish, and that any ancestors of mine, maternal, would have been Jewish, and any of my offspring and any future generations would be Jewish.
It's really amazing. And like you said, that you never know, you know, who in your descendants really has that, you know, the way the souls work, we have no understanding. Like, you had this feeling, but your siblings didn't have them. You know what I mean? Like, it just, things happen in a spiritual realm that, you know.
And that's something that happens to all of us, all people like me. We come alone to this place, and that's why it's so scary. So a lot of people say, well, you know, you're so brave, and why did, you know, how did you do this? And that's a problem, that it's not about being brave. I had a mission, and at first, like I said, it was about making sure that my descendants, you know, people coming from me would be Jewish if they so wished. You know, this is a very personal spiritual decision.
Right.
I don't mean that my children need to be Jewish, but maybe their children want to be Jewish. And it was such a journey that I said, you know what, I'm giving my future generations the option, if not the, you know, if not the go-ahead, but they have an option that I'm giving them to be open to them. So this pushed me. And then all the people from all over the world coming to me pushed me even further. And because I'm very vocal, and I have no qualms about speaking about myself or the issues I've had with my family, I think it helps other people when they're struggling to know, yeah, I still have a great big Catholic family.
Right.
And they call me, and what do I do? And what do you do on Christmas Eve? And, you know, what do you do on Easter? And, you know, and it's stuff that nobody likes to talk about. but I find that when I do, it helps other people be brave as well.
As well, absolutely. And I do, you are brave, period. It is, listen, I feel like you took on the emotional burden of future generations in your family. You made that, you could have just left it as is, and whoever wants to, you know, do some, you know, but you've really, not only is it emotionally draining just to go through a process of conversion in and of itself, but you've taken it, you know, such a huge step forward that is really, it's really amazing and admirable. And I just remember thinking, wow, this can be so emotional, and you really took it head on. And as you said, it seems it's for a greater mission and purpose, which makes it all the more meaningful, right?
Yes. And that, you know, when I became open for others, like that, it became my mission, and that was when, at some point, my children grew up. Right now, my son, you know, is married, and, you know, my daughter's not, but, you know, they're already adults. And at some point, the kids didn't seem to me that they were going to be practicing Jews. And I said to myself, oh, my goodness, I have done all of this work, and it may not happen with my kids. I better make sure it happens with somebody else's kids.
Right.
Because I've done all of this, and let it help others if it's not going to help my own family. I think that we vindicate what happened to our families, you know, at the Inquisition, just by returning. But we cannot, we cannot guarantee that all the family will return, and we certainly cannot guarantee that our children will return. This is really a soul mission. That means it's my soul. I really don't think it's about the blood. I think it's about my soul.
It is. It is. I agree with you. It has to do with the soul. And I think you made a beautiful point before that I want to stress it, because I think people don't realize you use the word alone. And I really think that's the best way to describe what people who go through this. They are, these souls are born kind of like they're scattered and they're alone. It's like a very lonely space, right?
It's very lonely, and we don't come back with our families that are with us in this time and space. We're
right.
Coming back, and our souls, it's been written a lot through generations that any convert, any real convert, a piece of their soul was at Mount Sinai.
Right.
Or we're still holding sparks. And, well, so must it also be, not just for converts, but for people who were once Jewish. And I feel very strongly that I have a very deep Jewish, an old Jewish soul.
Right.
So I can't expect that my whole family's gonna, you know, say, yay, let's put away the Christmas tree and bring out the menorah. You know, no, you know, Christmas trees are very pretty, and they sparkle a lot more than the menorah. So it's not about that. So, you know, you have to, when you embark on these missions, you have to be very sensitive to your family members.
Yes.
And understand that as gung-ho as I may be, my daughter, who's my blood, may not share my soul.
Right. Jenny, let's talk about the things that you, the technicalities of this, because I remember when the first time we connected about a year ago in Facebook, you mentioned that you were in Peru and you were digging through these archives and these offices and bureaucracy. So tell us about these kinds of experiences, trying to get yourself through this paperwork and this, maybe their apathy from these, you know, government officials and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes.
Well, what I'm trying to do now, so for me to reconstruct my own lineage,
mm-hmm.
I had to go back through the Catholic Church records until
mm-hmm.
I found a Jew. Now, you're not going to find a Jew in a baptism record. So there's subtle nuances in the records, things like the baby was too sick to go to the church to be baptized, so they baptized him at home, but thereby eluding that whole baptism thing. Now, as you go back through the records of a family like mine, you find a lot of sick babies, and everybody seemed to be fine later. So you start reconstructing, and you start seeing things like customs that maybe, you know, were Jewish customs, but you see them hidden through the records. And then you have to find for the rabbis a Jew in the tree. All of the circumstantial evidence is really nice, but they want to see the Jew. And normally that Jewish person is going to come up in the Inquisition records. So you're going to have to take your family all the way back through the Catholic Church until you get to a certain point, and then you're going to have to make a certain leap to find your last Maria Ramirez in 1545 and find that her maternal relative was judged in the Inquisition. Accessing those Inquisition records is extremely difficult. They're in medieval Portuguese and medieval Spanish. It's very hard. Plus, they are not digitized. So when you see me running around Peru, and I'm running around Portugal, and I'm running around in Spain or wherever I am, I'm trying to make deals with these archives, and I have the funding. Right now, I've been given the funding by a company that is not ready to reveal who they are. Wow. But they have given me the funding to make these contracts with all of these archives that are housing and hiding these Inquisition records, and to get scanners in there, people in there, translators in there, and upload it. So when you see me running around doing that, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to make the deals whereby they will relinquish these records to an outside company to be scanned and uploaded and translated, so that the next guy in Ecuador or the Dominican Republic that wants to do what I did, they don't have to take 10 years and thousands of dollars. They will have it online.
I hope you're not allergic to dust.
It's super dusty.
This is crazy. And, you know, you mentioned about sick babies. And I understand that also something that you find as you start going back and looking at the Catholic Church records is you find usually a priest in every generation, right?
You do. You find a priest and or a nun, because the priest would make sure. Mine was full of priests. Actually, that was my mom's argument as to why we were so Catholic. And I kept telling her that's why we were so Jewish. Because these priests were making you be able to get married according to the laws of Moses privately in the house, and then they go to the church and do the Catholic wedding. So the priest was being sure that you know, the death rites were not just the Catholic ones, and that Kaddish was being said. So they disguised themselves in the priest robes. So when you start seeing a lot of priests in your family back in the day, or at least one per generation, it's one of the signals that there could be a crypto-Jewish background.
So they were kind of like an implant, a cover-up.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And in your case, even though you thought that your family was from Spanish descent, you hit a wall that then led you to think that where you needed to be looking is in the Portuguese Inquisition records, correct?
Correct, because I was finding nothing in the Spanish Inquisition records, so I was hitting these brick walls, because obviously they lived in Spain. So where are you going to look? The rabbis were telling me that I needed to find somebody that had been judged in the Inquisition, and Spain wasn't really turning up anything. And because the village of my family was so close to the border with Portugal, like right there on the other side of the river, I finally found that they had been judged in Portugal. Back in the day, they went back and forth. So I found more than 40 Inquisition records of my own family on the Portuguese side. And I was in Portugal right before Pesa this year.
Oh.
And I was negotiating with Torre do Tombo, who is the largest holder of Inquisition documents. And they have only uploaded 20% of Lisbon and the Lisbon court. And there are about 7 or 8 courts that are in boxes. So I was negotiating with them about restoring the documents and getting them scanned, the documents. As a matter of fact, right before we got on this call, mm-hmm. I was texting on my phone with the director of the Torre do Tombo archives, trying to push him to send me a contract. So,
wow.
That's where we are with that.
Wow, this is amazing. By the way, I don't know that you mentioned this in your book, but aside from all the hints and the clues you had from your family and customs and whatever, are your last names, your maiden name, and from your father and your mother, are they like those traditional names that people think?
They are, but they've morphed so many times. I mean, people say, oh my gosh, I'm an Alvarez, so I must be, you know, and it's with an S and with a Z. All those are fallacies. That doesn't really exist. Like Ramos, which is my maiden name, Medina Ramos, both are very Jewish names. And Ramos kind of disappeared on my tree. Oh, I don't know. It was my grandmother's last name. I think it disappeared like in 1870. So I still had to go back another 400 years, and Ramos was gone.
Right.
So even though every single Spanish last name known to man is on my tree. Alvarez, Gutierrez, Dominguez, Fernandez, Rodriguez. So, you know, me and everybody else's, because, of course, you could be a Jewish Rodriguez and you could be a Catholic Rodriguez. So I don't hold too much to that.
Right. And just so listeners understood, you went all the way back to, what, 1405? Is that correct?
Right. I'm still at 1405. And what a lot of people don't know, because everybody's like, you know, talking about 1492 and 1492, what a lot of people don't know is that the first wave of conversions, the largest wave of conversions to Judaism ever, happened in 1391.
Oh, okay.
So these were people coming many times to just say, fine, I'll be Jewish, because there were so many pogroms, and they were so marginalized, and the Jews were not allowed to do their own. They were being put in their own other neighborhoods, and they weren't allowed to do their jobs. And it was so hard for them in Spain that they just said, I'll be Jewish. And this happened in 1391.
You mean I'll be Catholic?
I'll be Catholic. I'm sorry.
Right.
So by the very nature that my family, I went back to 1405, and I have not reached a Jewish name yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still at the Fernandez and blah, blah, and, you know, Ramirez and all of that. Tells me that they converted way before, like 1391.
Wow. This is so interesting. So now you went ahead and you wrote a second book, How I Found My 15 Grandmothers, and it's a step-by-step guide. So it's
correct. I wrote the second book because so many people were coming to me, and I never charge for anything I do. I mean, it's something that people come to me all the time. I don't charge. However, I have limited time because I work full time in my day job. And at night is when I do this. So
you don't sleep too much, right?
I do not. I do not. My friends tease me that I pack in 24-hour days, you know, of work. So at night when people are contacting me, they show up on my Facebook, they show up on my phone, they send me emails, and I can feel the pain because I have been part of that pain.
Right.
So I'm there trying to help them, but I don't charge anybody anything, and I just do it to direct them to where they should go. But it got to a point where there were so many that I said, you know what, let me just document this, let me write this, and put it out there so that people can feel that they can do this slowly and they can do this on their own.
Right.
And you can probably do it on your own until you need to go into the villages in Spain. And then you're going to have to either go or hire somebody to go.
Right, which you went yourself, and you had somebody also with you.
I had two, yes. It was, I had somebody digging because I work full time.
Right.
And then I would analyze what he would give me, because he didn't analyze. He would just give me all the documents, and then I would analyze the documents, and that's where I started finding these similarities.
Right. And that first trip to Spain was instrumental in turning this whole story for you around, wasn't it?
It was, because I finally was able to locate the fact that I hadn't even thought to look at Portugal, and I was focusing on Spain and hitting brick walls and brick walls. So sometimes when you go and you're standing in the middle of these villages, I'm convinced that the walls are talking to me.
Right.
And back to the crazy point, I'm convinced that you see things and all of a sudden you go, whoa, I didn't think of that before. And I think that you have to be in the place, in the moment, to be able to get those thoughts that are going to take you to the next level.
Right, which is part of why you have to really be emotionally ready, because it seems from your book that that trip, I mean, you had such eerie experiences there, like literally, like the air was talking to you, the souls were talking.
And I had just now in Portugal, I spent a week, my husband and I did the Passover Seders this year for the Belmonte community. And 2 years ago, we did it in Trancoso, also Portugal. But I spent a week going through a lot of these villages in Portugal this time.
Uh-huh.
And I would touch a wall of, like, in the Inquisition court, and I would feel it burning my hand.
Oh my
and
God.
I'd say to my husband, who's really practical and pragmatic and not an emotional Hispanic, I say, honey, could you touch this wall? And what do you feel? And he said, fine, I'm touching the wall. And the wall was burning my hand inside like a prison cell
wow.
of the Inquisition. So I do feel that when you're connected, you're connected, and they're trying even almost to the people that were there, the souls that are still, they're still trying to, they see in me, for
right.
example, or people like me, they see a way to connect.
Right, right, right. You just reminded me that it doesn't it say in a Gemara that when Mashiach comes, the walls will speak, right?
I'm telling you, this wall at this particular in Évora is where I touched it, and I was like, whoa. I had to pull my hand away. This just happened 2 weeks ago, and I was with four people, and I asked the others to put up their hand. Everyone was fine. So it's very emotionally draining, very draining.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jenny, you looked at your past, and this has created a new future for you, literally, and you've evolved tremendously since you started this journey as a young girl, like you said, with this identity crisis and whatever. But and you've obviously written two books, but there's so much more that you're up to. So tell us, I know that you're speaking all over. Tell us what's the latest with your work?
Okay, so I am speaking all over the place, and now I'm trying to make the speaking count, meaning I try to speak at as many Chabads as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a Chabad person. I attend a Young Israel. I am a modern Orthodox, and I'm not Chabad. But Chabad is at the forefront of every small town village around the world. So the reason that I speak so much at Chabad is that I want to create a community of people that understand that when somebody will knock on their door in Machu Picchu, Peru, or they'll knock on their door in South Salvador, and the Chabad rabbi and Rebbetzin are there, they should recognize the yearning and the burning in someone like me, and that it's not like, you know, they say in Yiddish, a baba maisa, a made-up story. It is really somebody who's real. And so I've made it my business to speak at as many Chabads as possible so that within that network, they will spread the word and they'll recognize. Also, writing a couple of other books I've been writing and hope to get out very soon. I found at my mother's house hundreds of handwritten recipes from the grandmothers.
Wow.
And these went back centuries. They were all handwritten and in very archaic measurements. So I asked women around the world if they would each take these recipes, bring it up to modern measurements, and they have done this. So it's very close to coming out, the recipes of the 15 grandmothers, or from the kitchens of the 15 grandmothers, I haven't decided which, and also a fiction book that I have written for many years that's called Concealed Identities, that kind of talks about a girl in 1400 and how she is, her soul is coming to be me in 1965.
Wow, I love all that, and I really love the fact that you are making it a point to speak in Chabad houses, because creating the sensitivity and the awareness is so important, because as you said, it's people will knock on the door You know, one might think, oh, well, it's just like some cuckoo person, right? Another cuckoo person that walked into the Chabad house. Like, but no, it might very well be that. And in a way, they have a big turmoil because they feel, like we said before, they feel very alone, period. They don't know where these feelings are coming from, right? But they might be very, very real.
And I think that it's Chabad who will be opening the door.
Embracing,
for
right.
these people and embracing and letting them just sit in.
Absolutely.
And giving, look, not everyone has the... Not everyone can come back and leave their families behind.
Right.
Not everyone can do that. But if they want to embrace and take a Torah class or, you know, take some sort or attend, you know, with their families a holiday that doesn't, let's say that doesn't interfere, like Purim, that's
right.
just kind of fun, then they can connect to their Judaism and they will be friends of the Jews.
Absolutely.
And we need friends.
Absolutely.
And they will be friends of Israel, and we need friends of Israel.
Right.
So I think that I'm helping a little bit for that to happen.
You definitely, definitely are. You're helping a lot. All right, Jenny, let's do some JLP fill in the blanks. And this is a part of the show where I say a sentence and I leave it open-ended and you complete it with the first thing that comes to mind. Is that cool? You ready?
Sure.
All right. I am Jenny Milgram, and I feel most spiritual when...
That would have to be on Friday nights when I light my candles at home. I travel a lot, but when I'm at home, years ago I started lighting two extra candles for my grandmothers that couldn't light anymore.
Wow.
And that forgotten how to light. So on Friday nights I light 7 candles. When I light the last 2 for the grandmothers, I literally cover my eyes and feel these little women dressed in black all around me, and that is my most spiritual moment, and I'm blessed enough to have it every day, every week of my life.
Wow, wow. I just got chills. That is so special. All right, my favorite mitzvah or one that I feel most connected to, which might be the one you just said, but could be something else.
Actually not. One of my favorite mitzvahs, and one that I try to do 3 or 4 times a year, is that I'll gather a group of bat mitzvah girls or bat mitzvah age girls or a group of women in different synagogues, and I will buy all the materials, and I will teach them, and we will all make beautiful pearl necklaces to donate to funds, which are called gemach, for brides that are poor and cannot afford beautiful pearl necklace and earrings.
I love that. Where'd you come up with that idea? That is so
awesome. Because I'm
awesome.
A beater. I'm a, you know, one of my hobbies is beading. So I just go to the trade shows and I buy armfuls of gorgeous oriental pearls, and then with the bat mitzvah classes when the girls are taking, I'll take and I'll generally approach a Chabad and say, you know, can I do this with your bat mitzvah girls, and then we'll donate it to a different gemach, and that's my favorite mitzvah.
I love that. Okay, my fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is
it happens every holiday, it's having my table full. I don't have a Jewish family.
Right.
So my community and my friends are my Jewish family. So
right.
my fondest, sweetest Jewish memories are having, I love to cook. So it's having my table full of people enjoying the holiday and talking Torah during the meal.
Wow. Well, I'm sure you're a great cook. You sound like you're a great cook. when I give tzedakah, I like to give too.
I like to give it to a woman's learning, and I like to give it also to a gemach for the brides. And also, any money that I make on selling the books or any, I mean, my books are $15 each, so it's just like not a big deal, but I collect all the money, and then I give prayer books, and my husband and I will take mezuzot, or we'll take talasim into the villages. And we give tzedakah that way. We give to the descendants of the crypto Jews in small poor villages around Latin America where they don't have the money to buy their siddurim and things like that.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. Finally, I am Jenny Milgram, and today I am most grateful for...
I think I'm most grateful for my big mouth and the leadership the leadership qualities that God gave me, because if I didn't have this, I wouldn't even, if I was shy, or I wouldn't be able to, you know, go out there. So I think that my big mouth and my leadership qualities, that are definitely God-given.
Wow, wow, what an outlook. I love it. Jenny Milgram, thank you so much. The books are My 15 Grandmothers and How I Found My 15 Grandmothers. They're both translated into Spanish, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and you can find them on Amazon or anywhere you buy your books, and you can people can find you at jennymilgram.com and on Facebook, right?
And the books are now being translated in a couple of months. My 15 Grandmothers will be in Farsi and in Yiddish.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome.
Okay, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you, and I look forward to keeping up with you on your wonderful work.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, and share the podcast with the Jewish women you love. To access today's show notes, ask Yael a question, or suggest a uniquely talented Jewish woman to be featured on the show, visit JewishLatinPrincess.com.